Hello, human peoples. You're listening to the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. Support us and gain access to great exclusive podcasts like Fox Mulder is a Maniac, Tom and Jeff Watch Batman, Star Trek The Next Futurama, and our latest show, Spiel Boys. Head over to patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. We do game streaming, movie nights with our patrons every Friday night, and you can even commission your own podcast about anything you want. Literally anything, within reason, and we have to do it. You are quite frankly out of excuses not to go visit patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/gamefully unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds.
Everybody say it with me. Dastmalchian. Dastmalchian.
Dastmalchian.
Dastmalchian. David Dastmalchian. Hi, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
My name is David Bell.
My name is Tom Ryman.
And we just watched Late Night with the Devil, otherwise known as Jimmy Fallon.
You're meddling with things you don't understand.
Whoa! Now, as you know, here on Night Owls, we think it's very important to keep an open mind. Please welcome Dr. June Ross Mitchell and Lily, the young subject of the book, Conversations with the Devil.
I really don't think it's a good idea, Jack. She's becoming more unpredictable.
That's a good thing. That's why we still do live TV.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned for a live television first as we attempt to commune with the devil.
That sounds like fun, doesn't it? He probably gets up to no good after dark.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They should just make this a show.
Puts
right
on Billy Idol. Yeah, they should just make this a show. They should give the devil a talk show.
Absolutely.
Have him do bits.
Yeah, I mean, not
monologue
even good
bits. Yeah, exactly, not good bits, monologue bits.
I like the idea that he has like shit ratings.
Right, like you should get like all late night talk shows, he should have a firm ceiling. Well, not all late night, but you know, like the popular one, like the Tonight Show.
Right.
Firm ceiling on how funny it can be.
Oh yeah. I love the idea of
it
the
can
devil.
Only be funny enough to make uncles chuckle.
Right. No, he still has to sell out. He still has to like do like stuff for Biden and like oh, I love
he's
that
he's gotta
idea.
Put dark Brandon memes.
Yeah, he's still got
just like
ads.
Everybody else. Yeah, he still has ads.
Oh, I want this for him. I want this for the devil.
He still has to have Sydney Sweeney come on to talk about Madam Web.
Hell yeah. God, yeah. I want to see that so bad.
So Tom Cruise, you're shooting a movie in space.
I mean, he'd definitely have to answer to Tom Cruise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is a horror movie. It's out in theaters. It got some buzz.
It did.
It got good reviews. As I said, it has David Dastmalchian and other people. Stephen King gave it a tweet, said he had seen it. His tweet
endorsement.
Well, actually, his tweet literally says results may vary, but I liked it. I'm like, that's not a huge endorsement from
it's
Stephen King.
It's not a huge endorsement. Yeah, that's not a great one.
Yeah.
And it's not a great, not a ringing endorsement from the director of Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah.
And that guy knows terror.
Right. So I think this was a limited release that became a wider release. That's my understanding, but I'm not certain.
It's definitely in more theaters this weekend than it was last weekend. But anyway.
Oh yeah. It got some negative buzz because it used AI for I think one graphic. Do I have that right?
I think it was at least that one. There may have been others, but for some of the interstitial graphics they use, like it's like, and we're back, you know, coming back from commercial breaks within the format of the movie.
Man.
At least partially AI generated. Yeah, it's such a weird thing. Like why, especially for a movie like this, which if you're not familiar with the premise is it's an episode of a lost episode of a 70s talk show in which a demonic possession happens live on air. So it's all this like 70s production design. All this effort went into making this show, this movie look like it's a TV show from the 1970s. So like clearly they have the artistic talent and the effort. So why not just like make some of your own little art cards? I don't know why you just ChatGPT that shit together. Just
yeah, like if there was
you
an
made
interview
a whole
with the director,
movie look like the 70s. Can you draw a picture that looks like the 70s?
Right. If there was an interview with the director who was just like, "Listen, we're down to the 0 hour. We had no money.
I'm
we
sure
just had
that's
to
what it was.
Crank
honestly.
This out.
I'm sure
yeah,
that's what
so.
It was.
I mean, that's giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
like, I would have loved an interview where they said something like that. Other, it's just weird. It's just weird because it's like indie artists of all people should, yeah, know the value of art.
You'd of, think. Of,
yeah. So it's a weird decision.
Especially since this thing has like 10 production company logos at the beginning. They had
people
to
laughed.
Ask a lot of people for money to make
the
this
audience,
film.
Yeah, the audience started laughing. Like when
it,
when
really
it got
was
to like,
kind of absurd. It was
yeah. It was like
but
that family
everybody,
guy joke.
Everybody that gave money wants to have their little thing at the beginning of the movie, so they have
yeah.
to. It is no joke. All it's like a minute and a half, maybe 2 minutes, just
of
fucking
logos.
Distributor logos, production
and it's
company
literally,
logos.
It was that Family Guy joke where I was like, "Oh, okay, this is the movie." And
yeah.
then it was another logo.
Yeah.
I was like, "Son of a bitch."
It's embarrassing.
It is. It is.
Don't
I mean, I get it.
That.
I get it. It's indie. They have to.
And everybody wants to, you know, get their laurels or whatever. But like, holy shit, man! You're making a movie,
right? You'd think at a production because the you know I don't blame the filmmakers because probably that's the deal. You know, it's just
yeah.
like
they
but
gave us they gave us money. We have to, you know.
Yeah, you'd think one of the fucking people be like, don't put my idiot logo up there. You know what? There's enough logos. And the logos weren't good looking. They were like, they were clearly like some billionaire or millionaire's logo that they whipped together.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. What did you, besides the logos?
We've been talking a lot around this movie.
I mean, it's fine. We got, you know.
We got time. Unlike them, we're not on Sweeps Week.
Exactly. What'd you think of Late Night with the Devil?
I was pretty disappointed by it.
I'm glad you said that. So, I liked it okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
I thought it was okay, but I was pretty
yes.
disappointed by it.
Yes, I left the theater kind of going like, really? That was it?
My biggest thing is that it does almost nothing with the format. It's this big showy premise of this is an it's essentially a found footage premise, although it's not a found footage film. But the premise is it's this lost episode of television. Here we are. We're going to show you this lost episode of TV. But it breaks the format immediately. So it's not just we're watching a bit. There's also like behind the scenes footage that's filmed by people that can't be there, so there's still like an omniscient camera in scenes, and then there's also like a documentary beginning, and it never
it's a movie like that
yeah.
stuff. It never
actually uses the TV show format for anything except for one time with like 10 minutes of the movie left, and it's when they do let's go back to the footage and see what that actually looked what the cameras recorded at that event. That's the
right.
first and only time they do anything with the TV show format. Like so, it's like why do this way? I was confounded by it. It really just comes off like a big loud gimmick.
It so there's a few things. Yeah, it does come off like a gimmick. I saw this with Hannah, and we were trying to identify like why each sort of come out of it going like yeah. I would say there's a few other things. One, like this feels like a extended VHS segment, right?
Yeah.
And that the thing is, they do have plenty of material. Like it didn't feel like they stretched too much for time. But the biggest thing is like what you're saying, and also tone. And what I mean by that is, we have a lot of horror comedies, right? And I don't know about you, but I don't find horror comedies scary. Do you find them scary? They're usually just fun.
The only one that's ever frightened me was American Werewolf in London.
Okay, and
but
so
I saw that when I also saw it when I was pretty young. But also, it's
right.
pretty gnarly. That's I
yeah.
think that's probably like that's more horror than comedy, but I would say that's like one of the best. I'm trying to find the right word, but one of the best ways that that has been pulled off, in my opinion, in terms of horror comedy. Sure. Like that's like the best execution of it. That's the word I was looking for.
Right. There's rare occasions where a horror comedy is scary, but for the most part, they're not, right? Like, and that's okay. Like, there's not a hit against them.
Yeah.
And what that's all to say that this has the DNA of a horror comedy, except it's not that funny. Like,
it's really not funny at all. There's not many jokes in it.
Right. So it's not funny.
And it's not like a cheeky tone either.
It's not that scary.
It's not scary at all.
Right. So what's left? Like, and again, I watched it and I don't think this is a bad movie. I was entertained watching it, but I that's just one of those weird things where they went for like a horror comedy tone, but they didn't have that much in terms of jokes. It's a lot of late night jokes, right? It's a lot of this joke is not funny and that's the point. He's right. Telling like a monologue joke. So there's this weird, it's in this weird twilight where I'm like, it's just sort of is. And I would argue a lot of VHS segments are that, but they're usually shorter, right? And they're more gnarly. And so like they make up for it by being like, Jesus Christ, this is weird. This is like, it's a lot of setup.
Yeah. And the payoff is...
The payoff is not good.
It's like almost non-existent.
Yeah, so she's like it's like a Ghostbusters effect. Like the electronic demon thing, I was like, really? This is what we're going with? Like, what a weird...
It was an okay effect. It was just...
Oh, it was cool, but it was not scary. Again, it's not scary. It's cool looking.
Yeah. I was just really she just basically turns into that electric demon and just kills everybody on stage. But it didn't have anything to do with like what they were like, what each person had been up to. Like the skeptic didn't get like any sort of like they just sort of like burn him. It didn't have anything to do with like anything he had said or done. Like, and like the lady doctor, like, it's no part of the fact that they're on a TV show or that they're doing this for TV or that it's supposed to be a TV. It's like, it would be like watching a found footage movie if nobody ever spoke to the cameraman and the cameraman never interacted with anyone. It just existed in the found footage movie as a cameraman.
Cameramen do film this. They're like panning with the characters as she's murdering everybody. And yes. I was like, well, that's silly.
Yeah. But it's just... I'm trying to find the right way to express like how like it doesn't do anything with the fact that it's a TV show. Like it could have taken place anywhere. Like it could have just been
right.
Like it's so confusing to me why you would choose to this sort of format for this story and then not write anything into it.
I have some thoughts on that because there is something to this, which is why do you make this about a talk show host? And I think the thing, so for the people who, I don't know, you should see the movie, but if you haven't seen the movie, it's about this, it starts, like you said, as almost a documentary about this late night host who's associated with the Grove,
which if
people don't know, that's a real fucking thing that like, presidents and powerful people go out into the woods and have this like party. It's probably just an orgy or it's them on LSD, like to be,
it could be both,
but there's this implication that there's like demonic stuff happening. And so right away you get the sense, cause they literally say something to him in the beginning of the montage. They're like, what you have to sacrifice to get this show. And I'm like, oh, okay. So he sold his soul to the devil. Got it. Like they telegraphed it, I think, too much, but this idea that he clearly made some sort of pact.
Right. He made a deal for success.
Yes. And then his wife dies of lung cancer. Yeah. In the documentary, they say his wife dies of lung cancer, and then he almost doesn't come back, and then he's come back, and now he's just battling for ratings.
They really hit on she dies of lung cancer despite never smoking.
Yeah.
So again, they really telegraph that, the price he clearly paid was his wife.
Yes. yeah, and if you're, I don't know, maybe not for everybody, but for me, I was like, okay, in the first like 2 minutes, I know what this film is about. But
even if you don't, that doesn't have anything to do with the criticisms I have for it.
Yes, it does. That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because it's the ride, you know, mm-hmm. it's the friends we make along the way.
Exactly. It's the worms that explode out of our skulls along the way.
Exactly. So that's all to say that it's about a late night host who's desperate for ratings, willing to do anything, and has essentially sold his soul. And I think they very specifically chose late night because that is kind of what everybody who does late night has to do.
Oh yeah, like, that's the sort of like what they're doing with the possessed girl, because you know, even though in the movie she's like the Linda Blair, she's the exorcist girl, that's the demon,
right?
But like out of context, this is them exploiting this unwell person, this person who needs to be protected, you know, from
right.
People who would, because she's a vulnerable person, and it's just exploiting her on television. So it's that, I think it's the idea of like the Jerry Springer level of talk show, I guess, that it's just like really reveling in.
But
the baser parts of you. They hint at it in that opening montage where he's gotten like kind of trashy.
For sure. Yeah, they show that he's desperate for ratings.
Yeah.
And I think this is a very loud version, but
it's
like
very
we were talking
loud,
about we were talking about the devil hosting a show. When you look at like Colbert, it's kind of wild when you realize like he used to be like he used to rule the world.
He used to host like this weird character.
Yeah, he went up in the fucking White House correspondence dinner and like bulldozed them. He used to be a force to be reckoned with, and now he's doing like Biden events, and he's part of this. He like kids who are now becoming teenagers, they're gonna look at Colbert and be like, yeah, he's that late night cheesy comedian, like, because that's the deal of late night, right? Late night takes a really good comic, well, sometimes a really good comic, sometimes a mediocre comic, but they take a comic and they go, all right, you've done great, now we're gonna protect you, put you in this little box, we're gonna feed you money, and you're gonna just do the stuff that we need you to do.
You are going to play nice with whoever we put on the show.
We're gonna put Trump on, and you're gonna have to
you're
be
gonna
nice.
Rub his head.
You are just going to be a corporate like stooge, basically. This is your reward.
You're a spokesman, a spokesperson for brands and movie studios, and
Right, and don't get me wrong, some of them get away with doing this role and making it, you know, standing out. You know, Letterman.
Yeah, Letterman. Everybody's chasing
Carson
because Carson used to be a tastemaker.
Right.
Like,
where
those days are over. Like, that's not the way things work anymore.
Exactly. Especially when you're not doing well in the ratings.
That's right. But of course, this movie takes place in 1977. So, like, Carson is still, he's very specifically chasing Carson in the ratings.
Yeah. And the director said, I looked into this, that they chose the 70s because this was the era where talk shows were more like Jerry Springer, where shit like this, people would do shit like this. This is also, the 70s feels like the last era where there was, and I don't mean this in a romantic way, but where the world was a little still mysterious, where you could have the Warrens, you could have Uri Geller, you could have
magical.
These con artists. Yeah. We still had that cold read guy in the, I want to say the 2000s, but for the most
John
part.
Yeah, John Edwards. I mean,
for the most part,
I mean,
we were done with this.
We've swung back hard in that direction.
Yeah,
with all the
conspiracy
thing.
Like,
but it's not mainstream. You're right.
Psychics.
Psychics and stuff really kind of, that did sort of go away after the 70s. This was sort of like when there was still some of it in the 80s, but yeah, you're absolutely right.
I
feel like that's true.
In the fictional spiritual world, it's when the door was still open, basically, when we were still welcoming the unknown.
I mean, it's,
obviously, it's actually a time where grifters
What we're saying is just that it was easier to get away with scams back then.
Exactly.
Because there wasn't much interstate policing. There wasn't much. But, the internet didn't exist. So, like, if somebody told you they were, like, a royalty from like Burundi or something, you couldn't immediately look it up and be like, no, you're not. words.
Right, exactly. Like, I am Googling it right now.
The fuck you are.
I am I'm taking a picture, putting it on Twitter, and it says here that you are a sex offender, sir.
Yeah.
But like the, you know, it's funny how horror movies kind of have the opposite values in my head of what I want for real life, where I'm like, in horror movies, I'm like, yes, I want God and the devil to exist and mysticism to be real.
Yeah.
And it's very funny that that's how it goes, but
that would just be, a real headache, you know, that'd be really inconvenient.
It really would be.
It'd be loud too, man. There'd be ghosts and angels and demons everywhere.
Oh yeah.
It'd just be loud as hell all the time.
Yeah. There'd be insurance for it. There'd be Ghostbusters going around. So that's all to say that like, this is that, you know, this is a movie that's sort of taking place in that time.
Yeah.
Only it's correct. And like what I was expecting with this movie was I was expecting a slow burn. Right.
Well, yeah,
that was going to be clear. But this is actually, I would argue, not actually a slow burn the way I thought. Like by the first half hour, there is a psychic man vomiting black alien X-Files goo. Yeah. And it's almost not subtle enough. Like I would argue it's a slow burn, but it's not subtle, meaning that it takes a while for anything to really definitively happen because they have to, and I know why, they have to keep the cameras rolling, right? The idea is we need to we need to have like that plausible deniability where it's
right,
like,
yeah, and it's not, you're right, it's not a slow burn, it's a couple of really extreme things happen,
right,
with a lot of space in between.
Yeah, and people have to sort of just, you know, they have the skeptic on stage who is a stand-in for,
James,
what's that guy's
name? Randy.
Randy, yeah.
But he's literally just like, he has the check in his pocket. This guy, Randy, famously carries around a check for anybody who can prove to him psychic phenomena or supernatural phenomena. He's never paid the check out.
Right, yeah. It's a common thing.
Christu is clearly supposed to be like a Uri Geller or somebody.
Right.
And that one thing that was subtle about him vomiting the black ichor is that he loses that voice instantly.
Oh yeah.
But nobody calls it out. They really don't call it out. So it is a little subtle.
That's very funny.
But he does lose the voice immediately.
He's sort of a con man, but not apparently. But like, so like, what I expected was this slow idea where there would be, and they sort of still do this, where some people are like, I think this is fucked up, we need to stop. And then producers are like, it's fine, it's all flim flam, don't worry. I like that dynamic of like, all right, that's a reason why they keep the cameras going. But I kind of wanted I still wanted more subtlety. I don't know. I'm not, it's hard because it's like, I'm trying to think of like, what should they have done?
Well, here's something I was curious about, because I really thought this would have worked better if they didn't have any of the, or I don't know if it would have worked better, but I really would have liked to see how this would have looked if it didn't have the opening where it's like a documentary opening that really gives you a rundown of who everybody is and what's happening. And if it didn't have like the interstitial stuff filmed the way it is, like the commercial break stuff, like the behind the scenes stuff, if it was still just filmed in the studio cameras, as it would be, because all that's happened is they just cut the feed, because they're broadcasting live.
Yes.
So it would just all still be filmed by the cameras on stage. I kept wondering what this movie would have looked like if it just starts with the beginning of the show and we only watch it as the show. So we learn all this stuff because they do sort of all the stuff about the Grove and about his wife. That all comes out in the episode. We didn't need the setup.
Yeah, it's like they thought we were dumb.
I was wondering if it was added after a point, like after it got wide distribution or something. But I also was curious, just like, man, I really would have liked to have seen them attempt to do this as just the episode of television and let all that stuff
more subtle.
Yeah, seep into the narrative because it's all still there. Like it all still comes up.
Yeah, and they could just be going long, because obviously one of the issues
late night show is 90 minutes.
Oh yeah, you're right. All right, yeah, they could do that.
So it just could have been the length of the show.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And I think that would have helped, because it over-explains for sure. And I'm not sure. Yeah, that could have been in the scripting stage, to be honest, because you get a lot of dumb notes, right? Where it's like, we need to be extremely clear about this. Like, it could have been a draft where they had to do that. You're right, where it's like they immediately break the format. The only time they do it where I'm like, that's okay, is at the end when he has his like 2001 journey.
He literally has his 2001 journey / Twisted Metal Black ending.
Yeah, where it just shit. And I mean, did that? I feel like that's a little bit of a cop out, only in that I've seen a lot of movies do that now,
yes,
where they go into like this fugue state dream sequence where they just go through like a demonic like short film, basically, where it's him reliving his life. And I didn't know why that mattered. Like what was happening to him? I'm still not quite sure.
I think the idea was supposed to be like he had already sold his soul, because like his whole life was unfolding on this television show, basically.
Right.
I think that was the idea. It was just, I don't know.
It's hard, right? I think so.
it was a weird way to conclude this movie. It was weird that that's what all this was building towards. It further confounded me as to why they chose to do this in a TV quasi-TV show format, not even totally sticking to it. So it's like, right, if that was the ending that was always going to happen, it's like, why do this as a TV show then?
And the reveal is something that's just very evident at the beginning. You know what I think I would have liked? So, weird reference point, but the movie Devil, which is that not great movie. I actually think that movie is a little underrated, but it's not amazing, because it has some very dumb scenes.
There's some incredibly funny bits in it, but the basic premise is like Lifeboat with the Devil. That's cool.
Yeah, and in that there's sort of this element of confession, of like people having their lives exposed. I kind of wanted a version where the girl who's possessed starts airing dirty laundry.
Because she does a little bit of that.
She does a little bit of that, but I wanted to see, like, for example, there was clear tension between him and his Andy Richter in this. His
Ed McMahon, yeah, his Andy Richter.
And I was like, ooh, I wonder what that's about. And it never really comes out. You get this feeling of, like, they have a lot of history together, right? Like, I wanted to see this thing where, like, she starts telling people's dirty, like airing their dirty laundry, and the audience isn't sure if this is a bit or not, and like the characters are getting more and more upset. Like, you could do like a psychological horror, right, where like this devil on stage starts like just mind fucking them, and so there's nothing that has to be supernatural. No one has to vomit black goo all of a sudden,
right?
Because I think that's just
That's every possession movie, and that's all that happens in this movie, is they get the girl on, she turns into the demon, and her face is all cut up.
She's the Exorcist,
because it was cut up in The Exorcist, except they forget that it's cut up in The Exorcist because she clawed her own face apart.
Right, and
just because she's turned into a demon. But she says a couple of naughty words, and then she levitates, and that's literally fucking it until the very end of the movie, when her head bursts open as a demon and she just kills everybody on stage. That's it.
Right. And she has, again, I can't stress enough, she has electro powers.
Yeah, she's electro.
And I don't know why that is.
Me either.
Was such a weird choice. It took me out. Anything that could have been scary, the moment there's like Ghostbusters effects over it, I was just like, well, that's cool. Don't get me wrong, it was gnarly to watch. It was like, that's a cool effect, but it just feels like we really could have gotten a scary movie here, is kind of where I'm disappointed.
Or at least an interesting or clever movie. Like, that's what was really bugging me about it. It's like, it's not only is it not scary, but it doesn't do anything with the format. I keep saying it. I'm sorry.
Right. No, it really doesn't. They almost
do one thing and then abandon it. Like you were pointing out with the stuff between him and his Andy Richter, there's a couple of ideas here that I would have loved them to keep exploring. Is they do this bit when they bring the possessed girl on for the first time, which every time the camera cuts to a new camera, she looks over into it.
Yes.
And that's a really subtle bit that they could have kept going, because the way live TV works is that there's somebody up in the studio and they're cutting between live cameras on the fly.
Yeah, she shouldn't know.
There is no way for a person to know which camera is on them at any given, which camera is the one that is on at any given time.
Right.
So her just kind of looking into each one as it's cutting around, and just that would have been a cool thing to keep up, but they abandoned it almost. They call it out and then abandon it almost immediately.
Right, and if they do that, I want more subtle stuff. Again,
right,
I would have liked this better as a psychological thing. Because here's the thing. The reason this movie isn't bad, one of the reasons at least, is the performances are great.
Performances are really good, yeah.
Yeah, everybody's doing a really good job at the role they're given. Like that sidekick is great because he's sort of the butt of a lot of jokes. Which is another thing where I was like, is this like, I felt like there was going to be some rage there, some idea where he's like, I am constantly the whipping boy for comedy's sake. Like, I thought he was going to have some sort of arc or again, some reveals about him, because he's doing that really subtle idea, that performance that he's uncomfortable, but he has to be the guy who's not uncomfortable. He has to be the guy, his job is to roll with the punches, right? His job is to be the guy who keeps everything moving. Same with the host character. And I thought they were going to play with that idea more because they're doing such a great job at that role. And so it's like, that's kind of the frustration. That's kind of the disappointment, which is like, everybody's doing a really good job playing these parts. And it felt like they didn't have enough they got to do with those roles. There was opportunity for a lot of really subtle things to happen. And I feel like this is a case where less is more. Although, I mean, maybe if they did less, this thing wouldn't have been a hit, right? This thing wouldn't have been.
I don't know.
It's clearly doing well, right? Like, people like it.
It's getting buzz. I wonder if the format is just, I don't know.
I think there's a lot of people.
The TV show
out there
gimmick is really clicking with people. Again, even though they don't do shit with it.
And there's been a movie about like this before. There's been a few.
There's a few.
And so, like, I think what it is sometimes this is just the loudest version that people hadn't seen the other versions, or, you know, like,
yeah, it's a shame when it's all of this. It's doubly a shame when it's all this effort, you know, at the production to make it look like it's this throwback TV show, and at all the performances and the effects, which I think look pretty good. There's clearly something here. Like, it's a well-made movie, but like, it's all in service of, ultimately, the scares are, like we said, a real basic Exorcist clone.
I don't think there was a couple moments where I felt some genuine tension, and then they did nothing.
It didn't go anywhere. It built to nothing.
Yeah.
So, like, the only scares are the Exorcist thing, this bizarre worm scenario that we haven't gotten to, that turns out it's just like this completely impossible group hypnosis that the James Randi character pulls off.
That felt like padding to me.
Yeah, it was,
because
it was like a dream. It was a cheat, right? It's like when you kill off a character and then only to have him wake up in the bed. Oh, it was just a dream.
Right. Because what happens is this character, the skeptic, they do the exorcism, and it seems like undeniably, like, she levitated.
Yeah, the chair floated. Like, she spoke with two voices at once. She knew things she couldn't know.
Right. And they're like, give her the check. Give her the check. And he's like, no, I'll demonstrate it. So he sits down the co-host, and we get the sequence where it seems like genuinely something's happening. He's hearing sounds. He's hot and itchy. This was one of those cases where I'm like, oh, he's hypnotizing him, isn't he? Because they sort of, he starts hypnotizing.
Well, he says he does. Yeah, he pulls out his watch and it becomes a little hypnotist's like dial.
Right. But we start seeing what what's happening. And he rips open his shirt and worms come spilling out, or rather his flesh.
His flesh shirt.
The movie wants you to think like he's hypnotizing him. Oh, maybe he's not. And then they just reveal like, no, he was hypnotizing him. And they say like, even the people at home were probably hypnotized. And it's sort of tough because it's like, we know hypnotism doesn't work this way.
Yeah.
And like, you have to sort of pretend it does. And I get that. But they then say, let's watch back the tape to see if that's what actually happened. And that's why it's a cheat, right? Because we're watching the tape.
Yeah.
So it's a tough thing they're doing.
It's also the only time they use the TV show gimmick. Let's go back and look at the tape, and then we see, oh, it was something different. And then that's the only other scare, is a single frame of his wife's ghost.
Right, which did not look great.
No, it looked pretty goddamn silly.
It's kind of Ghostbusters effects. It really is.
Which isn't not necessarily bad, but it's not scary.
It's not scary, yeah.
It looks cool. But that tape setup,
they're really good at the setup because I would argue also the part where he's hypnotizing, you can see the girl in the background, and I kept watching her being like, what is she going to fucking do? Is she going to do something?
Yeah.
Like they do this spotlight and they do this shot because the thing that you realize, and I'm sure the directors realized early on, is a talk show format is hard to make stuff like a jump scare or tension with the cinematography. Because it's always these kind of wide shots. It's brightly lit. This was one of the few times where it's like close-ups and darkly lit. And I'm like, ooh. And they don't really utilize that the way I thought they would, I guess. I just thought something more would happen here. But it feels very anticlimactic.
His head does explode into a giant worm. It's pretty cool.
It does. It's cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's not scary. But
yeah,
it's cool.
it's weird that like it's all of this to build up to what is essentially three scares, and they're just very loud and obvious things, like the Exorcist thing, which is just the Exorcist, his wife's ghost, which is funny.
Yeah.
And the demon at the end, which is like it's scary in the way that. Like a shark, like the shark attacking in Jaws is scary, or like the T-Rex attack in Jurassic Park is scary. It's just like this big, loud attack from
it.
A monster.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird because it's a
weird movie.
It is. Like, this is one of those things about found footage that I find fascinating, which is that the most successful found footage movie, I mean, I'm sure there's now number-wise, like budget, or box office wise, Paranormal Activity actually has probably won this, but Blair Witch Project, you know, is like one of the most famous.
Yeah.
And one of the first. And that movie is subtle as shit. Like, it compared to what we have now, at least, where it's like, yeah, there's still like they get attacked in the tent, but like the ending is subtle. And it was creepy because it was subtle, because you're like, I don't know what that was, you know?
Yeah.
And it's weird that since then, very few found footage movies are that subtle anymore. And that can capture that creepiness. And it's like they sort of said, okay, we did the what it once, and now we're just going to be over the top. And even VHS, a series that I love, they don't do anything subtle in VHS, right? Most of the time, it's let's see how batshit over the top we can be. Which is fun.
Yeah.
But this felt like an opportunity to be genuinely subtle, to be creepy, to have this demon on stage. You're on, like, again, I can't get over the fact that, okay, it's a demon on live television. Have the demon expose people. That seems like such a good opportunity to do that, right? Because they're right there on live television. And so it's like, expose that the Andy Richter killed somebody or something like that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, let us have it.
Yeah, use these characters that there's been a lot of tension between the characters. That's, again, there's like that. I think that was the weirdest thing. There's tension between the characters. There's the producer who's like pushing them on, who's threatening the Andy Richter character. There's this the guy who's trying, the skeptic. There's all this like emotional tension that doesn't go anywhere. It just, they all just die. They literally all just die in 30 seconds.
On stage, yeah.
Yeah, basically the demon starts shooting electricity out of her. Her face explodes in half. She twists the head.
Again, it rules.
It does.
Just not terribly scary.
Yeah, it rules, but it's very anticlimactic for these characters that you've been watching.
Yeah, and all this buildup and tension and dread, and then it's just this electric monster that blows everybody up like a Ghostbuster ghost.
Right, it's done in like 30 seconds. And it was like all these characters with all this shit between them, it's just like, nah, they're dead. And if that was the point, then that would be cool, but it didn't feel like, you know, like No Country for Old Men, very famously, has an anticlimactic death. Yeah. And the point is to make a comment about violence. This movie isn't doing that. It's not trying to make a comment about the nature of violence. It just felt like they were like, so what do we do? Like, we're hitting the end of our movie. What do we do? Ah, have the demon kill everybody. And it was like, oh, okay.
All right, sounds good. Places, right, everyone.
It sort of is a blue balling, like where you're like, shit, man.
It is.
I wanted more.
It's a demon blue balling.
And then he does a sequence where he's like hallucinating, and the wife exposes him. And again, even if you didn't know, once you hear it, you're like, oh yeah, of course, because the demon says earlier, like, we met at the Grove, so you, like, they telegraph it so fucking much. And it's weird to telegraph that so much when that's also the twist.
Yeah.
Or the ending.
Because, or at least they present it as members, the twist. I don't.
Right. Where at the end she's like, I was the sacrifice.
But we've mentioned his, like, Grove, yeah, no, connection shit, twice already. Like, we know that this is what happened.
Right. Like, that almost should have been a secondary reveal to, like, some bigger reveal. And then it just cuts to him in the empty studio and he's stabbed the girl.
Yes.
And he doesn't know what's real and what's not. And then it ends. And it just felt so, I don't know, blue balls.
Yeah.
Real blue balls.
It was a little whack. It was a little whack ass.
Yeah. There's a lot of really good filmmaking and performances, but it doesn't amount to anything.
Yeah. It's just ultimately kind of a letdown. It's not a bad movie. It's just very okay.
Yeah. Because it didn't... I think what we're getting at here is that it didn't aspire to be any bigger than a middle-of-the-road horror movie, right?
Where, right, it's like, we've, and it's, seen, it's so high concept, and it doesn't do anything, right, with it, is what was,
that's,
it's
what, it
what
is,
my biggest problem is.
We both went into this film expecting something, it to use its format in a clever way.
And it just doesn't.
Yeah, because when you think about what this movie is, it's like, oh, okay, it's a bunch of actors on stage with someone pretending to be the devil. It's going to be really heady, you know, like, it's going to have a lot of, and it just didn't aspire beyond, let's have a few kind of, not even jump scares. Let's just have a few ghouls pop out and then we're done. And they weren't wrong. Again, this movie is doing good.
Yeah.
So it's like, that is apparently what people wanted. I mean, that's the thing, right? A movie like Lake Mungo, which is more subtle, doesn't exactly get a huge audience.
No.
This gets, like, the teenagers. It gets the people who are just wanting to see some gnarly shit. And you get to see some gnarly shit. But I would also argue the gnarly shit in this is not, like, particularly unique.
No, it's cool, and it's well done. It's well executed. Yeah. No pun intended. It's a good neck slash and a good worm head explosion. Solid neck twist to coffee table smash. Solid burning a guy.
Yeah.
Solid Ghostbuster ghost. It's just, it was all, you know, it wasn't anything like, it didn't like blow me away in that area. So it was, again, just kind of like, well, it was well done. I'm glad it was done in a good way and not just like with shitty digital effects, which was a problem in a lot of like aughts and early teens horror movies.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think we got it across. I am happy that Des Melchian.
Oh yeah, he's great.
He traditionally, he always plays weirdos, right?
Yeah, like, he's always kind of a side. He's a that guy.
Yeah, and he's not a leading man.
No.
And it's clear that he's a very good actor, and he deserves to be front and center more. And so it's really nice to see him play a role that honestly is against type, where it's like, I don't see him as a outgoing late
a
night
charismatic
host.
Talk show host. It's like, yeah. No, he always plays little golems, like
he plays
little
incels,
weirdos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was like watching this of like, okay, all right. Like this is, I bet this was really satisfying
he
for
was
him.
Famously the henchman that was too crazy for Aaron Eckhart to threaten in the Dark
Knight.
Yeah,
exactly. And he did a great job.
Yeah, he's great. He's totally crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like that in Polka Dot Man, where in that one he's also a maniac. So I don't know. It's just, it was really nice to see him get something. And so, again, that's almost part of the disappointment, where it's like, God, I wish, I don't know, I wish they did more.
I mean,
I keep going back and forth, where it's like, but everybody likes this movie.
Yeah,
so.
it's like a personal disappointment, because clearly, like, everybody's seeing this movie, and it's a great showcase of his ability as an actor. So, like, shit, man. Don't be disappointed in that aspect, I guess.
Right. I'm like so weirdly conflicted, because I watched this movie and I was like, really?
There is a lot about it that I liked and thought was well done. But it's just, man, yeah. I can't totally dismiss the movie, because like I said, we keep saying it's not a bad movie, and there's something here. Like, there's a lot of good elements to it.
All right. Here's the positive, I think,
mm-hmm.
is that it's all right. So it's not doing amazing, mind you. We have, but like right now it's made almost $4 million
with its budget.
Oh yeah.
Right. But how much did it cost? Like,
I don't know.
$500,000? No, probably not.
People are excited. I think people are excited about what horror has been lately. And I can't fault anybody for that, is that this is more interesting than a lot of horror movie. Like, the fact that we're looking at this is like, this was mid. Like, remember what mid used to be? Like, this is great.
I was about to say mid used to be fear.com, but that was never mid. That was always, no, that was always, always a 3.9 on IMDb.
But like, I'm just glad people are glomming to this, because like, I don't know, like that Slender Man movie or whatever, like, this is more interesting than most horror movies. And then watching
the last Conjuring movie. That's a good example of being extremely mid.
Yeah, that's a good. And then watching like all the trailers before this for In a Violent Nature and fucking Cuckoo and all these movies where I'm like, God damn, horror, Abigail, even Abigail, which is like, you know, there's shit like Abigail, but it's like we're loving these high concept horrors right now. And we're in this weird spot where we're sort of like, it's kind of reminds me of when you watch old 80s movies like Lair of the White Worm, where you're like, this isn't scary. This isn't that funny.
Star Wars came out and people were just trying shit.
Yeah. And it feels like that's what's happening now. People are just trying shit. And the result are movies like this where I'm like, well, it's not scary or funny. It's just kind of weird. What is this? And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, you know?
Right. Sometimes it's high concept just in pitch, like kind of this one, where it never really made it outside of the elevator pitch of it's going to be a TV show. I kind of feel like that can be the case, like with Megan. I feel like that's also what happened with Megan, the killer
is such
doll
a disappointment.
Movie.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I can't be that cynical old man yelling at a cloud, because there are plenty of great high concept horror movies coming out right now that do execute well on the premise.
Right. I'm just glad that we're making a bunch of them.
Yeah. And, like, even if they're all not great, they're at least like, you're right. Like the fact
some
that
are great, like, but it's, you know, it's a lot of swings, really weird swing. Megan's about a robotic doll, you know? And I'm like, this feels like what we used
TikTok
to
TikTok dances.
Yeah, this feels like the kind of shit we used to do. Like, remember, what is it, Magic? That movie with fucking Anthony Hopkins and a dummy? Like, we used to make really weird shit, and it feels like we're making weird shit again, and, like, it really varies. Like, that movie Abigail, I feel like, is leaning into it too much, where I'm like, all right, you want to be viral. I get it. You're trying to do Megan, but now it's R, like, at least that's R-rated. Like, sometimes it feels a little desperate, is what I'm saying, and sometimes it feels, like, really natural, but no matter what, like, it's all kind of good that I'm like, I'm glad they're being weird, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think horror is all about trying to find the new weird and scary, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because it's about surprise, right? Or at least it's tied into that surprise and the unexpected. And
I mean, that's even a bigger hit against this film because it doesn't do that. It just does The Exorcist for the most part. But like, I like them saying, like, let's have a little girl do a TikTok dance. Is that scary? Or is it funny?
I don't know. It's fucking weird.
It's real weird. Yeah. This should have had a little more weird, I think, which is funny to say since worms explode out of a guy.
Yeah, that was pretty good. But yeah, it's, I'm glad it exists. You know, like I said, why does it take place on a talk show? Could it take place anywhere? Even so, I'm glad they decided, hey, if it could take place anywhere, why not make it a talk show in the 1970s? Yeah. Why not make it a little weird, a little offbeat?
I just wish it was either funnier or scarier, and I would have preferred scarier because I think that would have been easier.
I'm sad that it's such a high concept that's ultimately very superficial. That's what the disappointment is. But other than that, some good filmmaking, some really good performances, especially from Dust Malchian. I agree with Stephen King. Your mileage may vary.
Yeah, again, it's clear that Stephen King wasn't blown away by it,
but
the,
like,
fact that he watched it and he recognized, like, other people won't like this.
I feel like he maybe landed somewhere or near where we did. It's like, it's not, there's something here. Like,
yeah, it's a pretty straightforward issue, I think, ultimately, which is great performances, great work, you know, we wish you did something better with the concept and was either scarier or funnier. That sums it up. We could have just said that at the start of this.
We could have.
We could have saved everybody time.
But you know what? It could have also just been a talk show in the 70s.
Right.
That's what we should have done. Dave, we should have made this episode like a talk show from the 70s.
We should have started out gabbing
about the gas shortage.
Oh, man, yeah.
And then get into our thoughts on that crazy episode of Night Owls.
Yeah, talking about Jimmy Carter or whatever.
Yeah.
That sounds like too much work, Tom.
It's a lot. That would have been a lot of work for a 52-minute review of a movie.
Yeah. I got a question. I mean, we don't even need to stretch here, but was there a lot of good horror trailers before this for you?
I don't remember any trailers, actually. I had to drive to a theater a little bit further away than my normal theater this time.
Oh, maybe you're late.
They only showed like one or two trailers, and I actually don't remember what they showed.
Oh, I guess my question
I think they showed Abigail.
There's a new Cuckoo trailer, and I guess my question to you is, like, which horror movie are you the most excited for now? Because after watching the new Cuckoo trailer, I'm like, fuck, that might be the one.
I don't know, man. I'm still
In a Violent Nature.
Stoked for
chill,
Long Legs. I'm stoked for In a Violent
long
Nature.
Long Legs. I need more Long Legs. I need more information, but yeah. Cuckoo and Long Legs, really. Neon, man. Neon's really killing it right now, at least with the trailers. And I'm very excited to see both of those.
Yeah. I think we're done talking about this one, though.
Yeah. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter, everyone.
Yeah. This is, what are we doing? This is a podcast. All right, let's start there. And if you want to hear more of our stuff or support us, you can go to our Patreon, patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed, GAMEFULLY, unemployed. We have exclusive podcasts on there, like Tom and Jeff Watch Batman, Fox Mulder's Maniacs, Star Trek The Next Futurama, and Spiel Boys. We have other tiers, too. Like, we have a tier where you watch movies with us every Friday night. We have like a Discord community that's lovely. We have custom We Just Watched episodes, all sorts of stuff. Check it out.
Yeah. We also have a store. Head over to gamefullyunemployed.com. You can find a link to our Teespring store where we have all kinds of cool original artwork and designs you can get on t-shirts, mugs, stickers, posters, all sorts of things. So slap your little peepers onto that. Mm-hmm. Your little worm popping peepers.
Yeah, your little worm peeps. Little wormy peeps.
Wormy little peeps, man.
Yeah.
Just slapping all around there. Whoop, nope. Hypnosis. Gotcha. Nope.
Hypnosis worms.
All right.
Weird.
Bye.
Hey, listen, our music is produced by Chris Corlew. You can find him on Twitter.com as The Corlew, or go to shipwreckedsailor.bandcamp.com. Our channel artwork is produced by Michael Vincent Bramley. For more of his work, go to mvbramley.art. Our episode artwork is by Justin Brown, available on Twitter as Justin T. Brown or at artnessbyjustinbrown.com. And finally, additional artwork is by Starlene Hodge. You can find her work at starlenearts.com or on Twitter as Starlene X. Cool. Goodbye.